so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
All right, it's time for another Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. I had a hilariously delightful experience on my walk with my dog this morning. We were a few blocks from my house and walking down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden I noticed that maybe 50 yards down the sidewalk, what appeared to be a squirrel was just sitting in the middle of the sidewalk.
Now, is your dog one of those dogs like in, what was that Pixar movie where like they freak out every time they see a squirrel?
Yeah, Over the Hedge.
I think it was Up. Was that it?
Oh, well, Over the Hedge, there's a fun dog scene. Anyway, yes and no. He wants to investigate, but he doesn't like totally lose it. He's like, I wonder what that is. Let's go check him out. So we're going towards this squirrel, and the squirrel's just sitting there in the middle of the path. And usually squirrels, when you get, 30 feet from them, they skitter off. And then I notice he's got what looked to me like a large navel orange that he's just kind of sitting in the center of the path with his hands on. And I'm like, well, that's weird. But as we get closer, I notice it's a mini pumpkin. So the squirrel's just sitting in the center of the sidewalk, like in normal sitting squirrel pose, two front hands right on top of this pumpkin, looking like I will fight you for this pumpkin if it comes to that. And kind of stared down me and my dog until we were no more than 3 feet from him. At which point he like gave us a dirty look and walked approximately 5 feet off to the side of the sidewalk.
With or without the pumpkin?
He left the pumpkin.
Okay.
But then once we got past him, I turned around and I saw him run back, pick up this pumpkin that had to weigh more than him, and then try to scurry away with this pumpkin. So I watched the squirrel just like struggle and trip and drag this pumpkin away until he skittered under a car with it, where presumably he was able to enjoy it, hopefully before the owner of that car returned.
I was going to say, I really thought that story was going to end with the squirrel being run over by a car.
No, it was just a hilarious squirrel who I'm going to find a way to tweet these pictures, but you can see like he stares off with my dog like, you're not getting this pumpkin. And then once we walk past him, he ran back out, and like watching a squirrel try to manage a pumpkin is good times.
I'm on record as this pumpkin thing that happens this time of year is just, it's way out of control. Pumpkin is a trash food. It's a trash flavor.
I don't agree that it's a trash flavor. I don't agree with that. I think it gets overdone this time of year.
I'm going to say something controversial on this of Thanksgiving week. Pumpkin is a trash pie.
Oh, that I agree with.
Yeah. Trash
pie. It's a dumb pie.
Yeah.
It's
a wasted opportunity, right? You're having pie. Why would you fill it with pumpkin? It's like when people serve you carrot cake for your birthday.
Oh, see, I like carrot cake, but it's not a birthday cake. I agree with that.
It's not a cake situation. It's not a vegetable situation. You're having pie, for God's sakes.
Right. Well, that's not my problem. I just am not a big fan of like gelatinous pies, for lack of a better word. Like, I like a fruit pie. I like an apple pie. I'm not a big pie guy.
I like a fruit pie. If I'm gonna go with like a Thanksgiving gelatinous pie, it's got to be pecan. You go with pecan.
Of course.
Pie. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're gonna kill yourself with mysterious sugary substances, make them be the best.
Yeah. Go for it. There's no reason to half-ass the pie.
No, I agree with that. Pumpkin pie, overrated. But pumpkins, I'm fine with. Like, I like a good pumpkin curry in, March. Get a good Thai restaurant, makes a good pumpkin curry.
I have a stomach that's spice averse.
All right. Well,
I approve of other people eating curries, but they're not totally for me.
Okay, well, all I'm saying is I understand your pumpkin aversion because the pumpkin explosion of every fall is annoying, and maybe most annoying are the rotting pumpkins we'll now be kicking around the street for the next month.
Yep.
But don't cast aspersions on pumpkin overall. It has some uses. Pumpkin seeds, delicious.
It's overrated. I mean, look, I'm not saying it's to be eradicated from the face of the earth, but it's overrated. All right, so we did pre-show meeting today. We decided 30 minutes of Atlanta Falcons talk off the top. I am ready. Let's go. Hello.
You're going to lead that, right? I was going to let you take the... All right.
No, we're just going to basically talk about the corners of the entertainment world that are not run by perverts. So that leaves us like four things.
Yeah, man, it's an upsetting time. But yeah, there are still some good things. We watched some good things this week, didn't we?
I
watched one great thing, I know.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a couple of really good things. I think the thing that we probably ought to start with, I think, is a thing we're both going to rave about, because everyone's raving about it at this point. Yep. And that's the film Lady Bird.
Yep.
You know, there's a letter going, you know, a bunch of these letters going around that the director of this movie, Greta Gerwig, is that the official pronunciation? I've always said yes. Gerwig, but I've heard some other ones, like it's really German and it's, you know, or
I don't know about that, but to my knowledge, it's Greta Gerwig, and I did meet her one time, and
she didn't correct you. Yeah.
No, although I did not say her last name to her face, she did not make a point of announcing that it's not Gerwig.
So she's been the internet's been passing around letters that she's written to artists to get them to approve her use of music in some of these films, and they're so charming and delightful and like personal. And in a way, to me, it was sort of a microcosm of both this movie and her sort of arrival as a directing talent. Like, you feel like this is a really, not only is this a good movie, but we're witnessing a really interesting, fresh, and like honest directing voice that's coming out of this, you know. And I'm excited not just to talk about this, but to see more movies from her.
Yes. She is incredibly talented. She is a wonderful actress. She is obviously, as you can see in these letters, funny and clever and interesting. And she has just made a wonderful film. I mean, it's just wonderful. It's a slice of life story. Yeah, you know, I don't want to call it unambitious, but it knows what it's doing, and it's a story about people, and it doesn't try to do anything too silly or over the top. It's just these people's lives, and I think she made incredible characters. I think Saoirse Ronan is fantastic in this movie. Frankly, I was surprised Greta is not in it, but I just don't have a bad thing to say. It's just the music is, you know, we talked about Baby Driver and how the music was almost a character in the film and how it sort of drives the action and in a visceral way. You know, you hear John Spencer Blues Explosion he's driving and it's exciting and everything's in rhythm and it's great.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the fight scenes are literally choreographed to the choreographed, beats.
Yeah, totally. The way music is used in this movie reminds me of a film I really loved called The Whackness. Did you see that?
I'm trying to remember. That was like there was like some pot dealing or something in that, right?
Yeah, a kid who was a big hip hop head and dealt weed out of a icy truck, a little icy cart in New York, with Ben Kingsley. Really, really good movie, and it much like this it took the music of the time and of the people and used it to it's scene setting. It's context. It's for those of us who lived that time anywhere around that age, it takes you right back. You know, when you hear it's Dave Matthews Band and Crash, I defy anyone between the age of like 28 and 40, 45 probably, not to have some sort of visceral reaction to that, you know, not to feel something because of that, whether it's hatred of Dave Matthews or nostalgia is up for grabs. But the way music is used to make moods and set scenes and give context is just great.
Yeah, and look, it's certainly quite plausible to hate Dave Matthews. I understand that, but I don't know. I defy you to watch that Crash Into Me scene and feel like I hate Dave Matthews coming out of it, because it's so like it's
just, of a time.
It's such a real moment that You know what I mean? Like, that felt authentic and is also sort of hilarious. Particularly the mood that they're in and what that song's actually about, and like there were so all of these things that many... are happening. Like, you can't be mad at Dave Matthews while that song's happening.
I tend to agree, but some people really hate the guy. I think that's a perfect example of like something happens emotionally when you hear it, whatever it is, right? And like there were so many. You said like funny. There were so many laughs in this movie that were like contextual, that you almost had to be there.
Yeah.
Or had to have been there to get the jokes.
I mean, I think contextual is a really key word. You know, like, and you sort of said something to this effect. Like, if you were to describe the plot of this film, you know, it's high school senior wants to go to college on the East Coast, and maybe it's unrealistic. Like, that's basically the whole movie, right?
Yeah, like high school senior has emotions, wants to go to college.
Yeah, and it's not to, you know.
It's not an elevator pitch you can really
like,
get paid off.
There's not a lot that really happens. You know, the Saoirse Ronan character is kind of a jerk in some ways.
Yeah.
Kind of an ungrateful jerk. Yep. And yet.
A little pretentious.
And yet it's easy to be in her shoes. It's easy to want to spend time in this world and in sort of enjoy these people who I think are all fundamentally decent people, whether they treat each other well or not, you know? And I don't know, like it was really fresh and fun to watch. And in what seems to have sort of been a rough movie going year, like, I don't know, something to root for. Like, I'm excited because, you know, as you know, we were not huge fans of Dunkirk. And so now
this
I have
is the opposite of Dunkirk. Yeah. That's a great. Yeah.
And now I have I feel like I'm going to have something that I can maybe root for come Oscar time. when everyone's going to be hyping Dunkirk.
Yeah. Cause here's a movie that has very little money, that has no special effects, that has, it's not that it's not nice to look at, but there's nothing special about looking at it. It's a movie. It's a narrative tale about people. And it speaks to who we are as people, and it speaks to emotions and to a certain time in history and all these things that we want great narrative art to do. All the stuff that Dunkirk completely ignored. And this to me is Titanic versus Good Will Hunting, only this movie might be better than Good Will Hunting and Dunkirk is definitely worse than Titanic. Like, that's the sort of argument we're having. And I hate Titanic, so saying that is extreme. It is a nothing movie.
I believe we've talked about this, but I haven't seen Titanic.
Good. That's 3 hours saved. but again, like, this is when we go to the Oscars and we're talking about these two movies, because I don't know that they're any other ones that are going to rise to this level. Although Three Billboards was really good. We'll talk about that next week because you it's not out in Minnesota yet. It's sillier. And I don't know. It's an interesting movie. I liked it a lot. But these are probably, I think there's a good chance Dunkirk and Lady Bird, of all things, are the two hot Best Picture candidates. One of them is a weird art installation and the other one's a great movie. Mm-hmm. You know? So I hope, I'm sure we'll do this bit again when we get to Oscar time, but I hope that the people who make movies and grade movies appreciate that Greta Gerwig made a great movie.
Yeah.
When, you know, a lot of people are making idiot spectaculars that are just not good.
Idiot spectaculars is a great word. And by the way, while we're here, shouts to Laurie Metcalf, who...
Oh, she's good.
Was incredible on Horace and Pete, which we talked about a couple months ago, and is brilliant in this film as well. And it's just one of those things, like, you know, she was like the chick from Roseanne, you know what I mean?
Yep. The other chick from Roseanne,
right?
Yeah.
The other chick from Roseanne, really the other chick almost. And yeah. And yet you had no idea that she had this kind of dramatic intensity in her. And
yeah.
And she's a tour de force, I think, in this film.
And by the way, just on a semi side note, anyone who's had demanding parents could probably identify with that situation.
Yeah. The scene when she's driving around the airport.
Yeah.
No words. It just crushes it. You know.
Yeah, no, Laurie Metcalf is it's the year of Laurie Metcalf, apparently.
I guess.
Look, I guess
the Norseman became out last year.
Yeah. Yeah, we just
watched it.
It's our year. It's our year of Laurie Metcalf.
Indeed. So yeah, so Lady Bird, a strong recommend, I'd say the strongest recommendation, really.
Yeah, I'm sure anyone who's a movie person has heard this from every corner of their movie universe, but it's just there are not enough movies that are like this, and there are very few movies that are this good.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd like to see more movies like this.
After our experiences watching the Meyerowitz stories and this, I say just let Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig make everything. Okay. Can Greta Gerwig direct the next Iron Man? Is that, can we, I don't know, man. Something's got to give.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like more
Taika Waititi just directed Thor. Yeah. Why not Noah Baumbach?
More chicks making comic book movies is the least we can do, I feel like.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, who made the most beloved comic book movie of the year? A woman.
A woman. That's right. Hashtag
Wonder
feminism.
Woman 2, starring and directed by Greta Gerwig. Just a thought.
You want to put her in it? Who's she going to play?
She could probably come up with a better villain character than David Thewlis's.
It's probably true. She may get to be Wonder Woman if Brett Ratner is still involved, apparently. So
yeah, no, there's no way he can. All right, let's not get that down. Let's not go back into that. But that guy can't work again, right?
You would think not, but I mean,
he should have stopped working after Rush Hour. But now we really, no one's. I gotta believe he can't work again.
Like the issue of consequences in this whole thing is like, I mean, it's still a little bit gray, doesn't it seem like, you know?
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, all right, we won't go there.
We did this last week.
All right. Should we jump to other things in the homework? You want to talk about other homework assignments?
I do.
So you watched some Justified, right?
Yes, I'm three episodes in. I have to say, like, it's hard to fit the. I wish it was shorter because it's hard to squeeze it in. But I think holiday time will give me some binge opportunities. It's great. I mean, I'm it's in my wheelhouse. There was no doubt I was going to enjoy this show. I feel like Walton Goggins probably, does he not become sort of a main character till later?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to continue to be more central.
Right. Cause so far it's really just about Timothy Oliphant, which is fine with me. I love Timothy Oliphant. And, frankly, I'm not sure you could have designed a better character for that guy than a cowboy hat wearing, gun firing U.S. Marshal in the late 90s or 2000s, whenever this takes place. It's perfect for him. You can see, like, you could see how much fun he's having the whole time, and it's a blast. The show's a blast.
Yeah, you know, in the beginning, I feel like, you know, because it is sort of developed from an Elmore Leonard novel, it has a lot more of that vibe, and as it goes, it sort of finds some of its own voice. I watched, when I found out you were watching, for sure, you know, I put on one last night and wanted to, like, binging a few, because it's just a fun, charming world to be in that Elmore Leonard way, in that there are lots of people who are really cool and they have some really great one liners.
Oh God, the lines are phenomenal.
You know, you got
Natalie Z.
And Natalie Z. I mean, the guy that plays the head of the FBI office is great.
Yes,
you know. You get all these kind of random, like, guest stars that pop up in various episodes, and it's just a fun show. And I would say that, yeah, it does sort of in almost kind of a Vice Principals way, like not in a in the comedic way, but the show eventually sort of becomes more of a showdown between the Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins characters. But you've got some really great villains to go through as you sort of meet some of the backwoods gangsters of Kentucky.
Yeah.
along the way of the show, there's some really excellent folks there. So
there's a guy in the episode I watched last night, which was episode 3, played the character Arnold Pinter, who is, sorry, I'm trying to find his name, David Eigenberg. If anyone who, he's one of those guys, anyone who Googles him will recognize him. But I'm just, I can already tell this is going to be one of those shows where each episode's weird guest star is going to make me like giggle and be excited. Like, it's just, yeah, I'm all in.
You're talking about Steve. I don't even know that he's that guy. He's Steve from Sex and the City.
Yeah, anyone's moniker who ends with from Sex and the City is a that guy to me.
I see. Does that include like Sarah Jessica Parker or
that gal?
Okay.
No, I know Sarah Jessica Parker. Come on, give me a break. Of course I know Sarah Jessica Parker.
All right, just saying.
But she's not. You would never describe her as from Sex and the City.
Okay, but I would describe Evan Handler as from Sex and the City.
I would describe him as from Californication.
Yeah, because definitely those two shows were equally popular.
What does popular have to do with it? I don't understand what. Okay. What point are you trying to make? I can't believe you suggested I would not know who Sarah Jessica Parker is. One of the great Jews in show business.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying you were just so out on Sex and the City. I didn't know.
All right. Well, Steve from Sex and the City has a delightful turn on Justified in episode 3, and apparently we'll be back. So
he'll be around. Yeah. I have people right now who now have a picture of David Eigenberg because I said Steve from Sex and the City.
Yeah. Well, they would have had a picture if they had Googled David Eigenberg as well.
That's true.
Then they would have had a visual picture. A on visual the computer, picture.
And then they would have said, oh,
picture.
It's Steve from Sex and the City.
I don't think so. Not my fan.
On his I'm on his IMDb page right now, and he's among the there's four things he's known for. One is Sex and the City, and the other is another is the Sex and the City movie.
You've stepped into a trap, my friend, because the IMDb known for is so silly that Doug Benson on his podcast, the Doug Loves Movies, plays a game where people have to guess who the actor is by their IMDb best known for, and people have a lot of trouble. So,
all right,
that is not necessarily. I mean, it works for the Jennifer Lawrences of the world, but for Steve from Sex and the City, who knows? Anything could be there.
All right. Well, speaking of Doug Benson. Should we check in on You're the Worst and that season finale?
Yes.
shouts to Doug Benson for being really great on that show.
Okay. So Doug Benson on You're the Worst. First of all,
playing himself, playing this weird ass like industrialist version of himself is fantastic.
It's so funny. It's because the joke actually started on the podcast I was just mentioning. One of the running jokes on Doug Loves Movies and presumably on his many other podcasts is making up pretend things Doug will do, like Doug loves sleeping or like Doug loves, just silly Doug loves things. So the idea of Doug Benson, consummate pothead, having a huge multinational business all going by Doug loves various things. It's just so funny. And he is so not an actor. He just leans all the way into how ridiculous is it that I would be running a multinational. So even when he's interacting as this like big businessman, the things he says and does are completely ridiculous. And he just looks super high and not at all professional the whole time.
It's so great.
It's so funny. It is such a great gag that like, I think you just got to give, I'm blanking on his name now. I want to say Stephen Fry, but that's not it, obviously. Stephen Falk, the creator, you got to give him a ton of credit for hearing the joke on Doug Loves Movies, because they've had, he's been on a couple times. I think they're friends, and being like, this is something I can do that will be funny. Right. It works so well. And to have him be Edgar's boss is just because Edgar's such a nut. I mean, the Edgar character has become more and more funny and like realized to me over the years. The rest of the characters, I think in a lot of ways, remain pretty broad caricatures.
Yeah.
But Edgar has gotten so funny and interesting, and his whole storyline with his weird mustachioed hipster friend this season was hilarious to me. And I would also say, just as this season drew to a close, and I guess we'll probably do slight spoilers here, I heard Aya Cash say something about this season a little while back, earlier on in the season, about how, you know, she barely got to act with Chris Gere this year because Gretchen and Jimmy are separate for most of it.
Right.
And I wasn't sure at various times in the season how much I liked that, because their interactions are generally some of my favorite things on the show. But as we drew to a close and I kind of looked back at this as like this season being sort of their journey back to each other, I think it was really successful.
I guess here's the question, to that end, like when Gretchen, and this is hardcore spoiler at this point, so I don't know why you would have left it the first spoiler warning, but if you're still concerned about that, at the, you know, when Gretchen sort of has her Kelly from 90210, I choose me moment. Was that Brenda? Was it Brenda that chose her?
I think it was once Kelly. Again, you are referencing cultural touchstones that I am not familiar with.
Wait a second. You, Mr. Teen Melodrama.
Oh, I'm too young, though. I'm too young for 90210. That's all.
But you're, wow. But it's the granddaddy. Like, every one of those shows you like is a ripoff of 90210.
Yeah, you can't go back, though. It doesn't play.
All right. Well, I would think maybe even you know the, I'm choosing between Dylan and Brandon. And she goes, I choose me. And that was the, anyway.
I did not know that, but sounds good.
It was good. It was very good. And that's, you know, I was thinking that she's walking out alone. And I realized that I was kind of good with that as the setup for next season. And then it kind of flipped. And I think I was almost a little disappointed.
Oh, were you? Because yeah. I was not disappointed at her choosing, at Gretchen choosing Gretchen. Even though I was not aware of the 90210 reference. I was delighted, though, when she chose Jimmy. Because I think that's what this show's about, ultimately.
Right.
And, you know, I am a hopeless romantic. And even though these people are terrible and seem to ruin the lives of almost everyone around them, there's something beautiful about the idea that they really are perfect for each other. Perfectly awful, perhaps, but perfect. And that they're drawn back to one another no matter what else happens. That I find that romantic and endearing.
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying the show should have kept them apart forever, because obviously they weren't going to do that. but I did think there were some interesting things there to play with. And I do like that the show seems a little bit more. I think that this season A was much funnier.
Than the last
few seasons. And, you know, which is important for a show that's ostensibly a comedy. And I think there were some really interesting and important storytelling things that it did along the way, but at times lost that, you know, it's just funny thing.
Yeah, but, you know, it also walks a really great line in terms of its comedy, that somewhere in between the complete nihilism of Always Sunny and, like, the, you know, sappy romance of some kind that finds this place where, yes, these people are awful, but we're not just laughing at how awful they are. There are things about them that we identify with and that right. we, you know, that I think they, if they were sort of wobbling back and forth on that tightrope in last season, they looked pretty locked in throughout this season.
Yeah. And I think that made this season, I think, more enjoyable on the whole, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. In fact, I probably enjoyed season two was really good and interesting, but I probably enjoyed this as much as any besides the first.
I did. I also enjoyed the occasional moments where it seems like even the characters are finally aware of that nihilism. Like, when Gretchen gives that speech about finally Gretchen's looking out for Gretchen.
Yeah. Well, and just the whole storyline about the whole storyline about friggin' Catherine Donahue and her sister trying to figure out who screwed them up.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
That was really great. It was really great. I think this is going to be the final season. And by the way, they did announce there's one more final season. I think it's going to be an interesting one for the Lindsay character.
Yeah. Where does she end up? Yeah, that's really – it's a really interesting question because if there's any – I mean, I'm good with it because she is, to me – first of all, Catherine Donahue is delightful just as a presence. But that character – it probably has the most inconsistencies, you know? Like, sometimes she's just so stupid you can't believe she's alive. Other times she seems, like, to have at least a vague idea of what's happening. Like, she's not super – like, I don't know exactly how dumb or thoughtful or it's hard to pin her down. But she's funny every time she's on screen, man. She just – she's got that character, whatever it is, nailed, and I just laugh almost every time I see her. She's so good.
She is, but making that character into a real human being is kind of like the last thing on the to-do list,
yes.
I think, for
right.
the show.
No, so. That's not really part of it. It's just she, yeah, what she's doing at the highest level.
Yeah, good times. And some quality supporting players.
The guy with the mustache was excellent. I mean, like... it's like somebody manifested their brain's vision of the most annoying hipster they could think of.
Yeah.
And he just, boom, he's like on screen, fully realized. That was excellent. Steve Agee was good as the front desk guy. Just like a lot of good small comedy parts.
Indeed. Yep. There's and that's been the hallmark of this show, which is fun. You know, plus Lou Diamond Phillips and Ben Folds and some crazy cameos this year. So
both of them were so good. Like, I love nothing more in Hollywood than people who play themselves as either idiots or dirtbags or alcoholics. You know, like Ben Folds as a problem alcoholic was so funny, and it's so perfect that it was Ben Folds of all people. And yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips' unexpected cameo as himself, as the almost daddy to Lindsay.
All right, should we? What else do we have?
Quick side notes. You know, you mentioned next season's the last season. I'll be fascinated to see what Stephen Falk does next, because you know this is a comedy, obviously, and I believe he was a Genji Kohan person. So I think his roots are primarily comedic, but the sort of stuff he covers on this show, I think, shows he's got ability to work in almost any sort of type of material, and I'd be very interested to see what his next effort looks like.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about it when it comes out. Let's jump into Search Party.
Yeah.
Now, the first season of Search Party was a joy, I would say.
Yes.
It's highly fired up for season two. Did not love the first two episodes.
Did you remember how it ended?
I think that was part of it. Was it definitely took me a while to be like, oh, yeah, this is how it happened.
So first season spoilers... Dory, played by the inimitable, I can't remember her name now.
Alia Shawkat, I believe.
Alia Shawkat, there it is. God, how do I forget Alia Shawkat? Speaking of Doug Loves Movies, Alia Shawkat, repeat audience member at the podcast Doug Loves Movies. Anyway, one of my life's ambitions is to meet Alia Shawkat.
Oh, I've done that.
you know, enough from you. Send me one more picture of your interaction with a famous person I love, and this podcast is over.
All right, sorry.
Okay. She plays Dory, a slightly off-center, a little bit crazy person, not knowing what she's doing with her life, who goes searching for an old college classmate who she barely knew, who apparently has gone missing. At the end of season one, which was last year, she finds her. It turns out nothing had happened. She just ran away because she's kind of a twat. Can I say that on the podcast?
I just got in trouble.
Oh, well. But she is. She's obnoxious and annoying and ran away because a married guy she was dating wouldn't leave his wife and kids. So she sucks. And they find her, and not only was she not kidnapped and never in danger, but she sucks. And in the midst of finding her, Dory accidentally kills a guy. So the whole first season, which was pretty light and silly, ends on this incredibly dark note, which I had kind of forgotten about, but I watched the season finale before I watched these first two to kind of get my bearings. And I have to say, when the season finale of season one ended and I was about to start season two, I was like, oh man, well, this show either has to like pull out of this incredibly quickly and pretend it sort of didn't happen, or things are about to get really dark. And sure enough, the title card of Search Party turned from the nice baby blue lettering that it had and filled up with red as if it was being drowned in blood as the season two began. And I think what we're going to get here is a much, much darker show because they effing killed a guy. And they do not seem to be writing that off in a goofy, silly way. They seem like they're going to deal with the fact that they murdered a guy for no reason. If that's what season two of the show is about, I'm not ruling out that it could be enjoyable or good, but it's certainly going to be very different. And it's not going to have the sort of irreverent charm that we loved about season one.
Yes. So, I mean, I guess the question, and I'm not sure it's fully there from the episodes we've seen so far, is what is that quality going to be that's going to replace it? That's going to, you know.
Yeah. Well, what is this show really? Right. I mean, because it can't be what it was season one.
Right.
All of the season one's humor and charm depended almost entirely on the fact that this was a meaningless, low stakes situation.
Right. And like, you know, I mean, I think we all sort of enjoyed the flaws of the characters and stuff like that.
Oh, of course. John Early is still hilarious. I mean, I don't know what my favorite parts of these episodes were. Definitely John Early, who were you with me when I saw him live in the comedy tent at Outside Lands?
I was not.
He's a very funny stand up, and his stand up is his like sort of stand up character is not so different from his obnoxious character on this show. His incredibly like wildly self-obsessed character. But he to me is where all the laughs are coming from in these first two episodes.
Yeah. Although I enjoy the Portia character a lot. And like that,
she's fun.
That
yeah.
moment where she gets recognized at the border was pretty funny.
Yes. Yeah, no, she's good. But I think John Early stands out for me. And I just wonder, you know, I guess in the first two episodes, I did really enjoy his sort of self-obsessed, narcissistic viewpoint when handling this disastrous situation. So that is something I expect I'll continue to get out of this season. But there really is a big question mark of, like, what are we watching right now?
Yeah, that's probably not something you want to say about a show that you really enjoyed last year.
No, especially in the second season, you know, it's like, what is this show? But that being said, we kind of said that about You're the Worst season two, and I think ultimately we were pretty satisfied.
Right. Said that about season two of a little show called The Wire.
Yeah, no doubt. Although people still don't love season two of the greatest show of all time. But yeah, I mean,
either way, I'm a season. I'll ride for season two. And you know, I don't know if you caught. And I'm going to say this name wrong. I always say Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah, Ta-Nehisi.
On the Bill Simmons podcast last week.
Of course, I did. You know, I did.
Yeah, but he says season two is the best season.
Yeah,
not what I would have expected.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's a that's not a red herring, but it's like a contrarian viewpoint.
You think it's a hot take?
Well, I understand his position, but his position isn't even really that it's the best season. His position is really it's the most important season.
Hmm.
At least that's how I that's how I took his argument.
Do you want breaking news on the latest person to
be, oh, jeez.
Hollywood Reporter John Lasseter from Pixar has a pattern of alleged misconduct.
You know, can I just say, first of all, just to be clear, this is great that these stories are now coming out. If it's harder for abusive men to hide in show business, great. I would love to apply this same rigor to the business world, because I don't think there's any reason to expect that business executives behave differently than movie executives. I think this is a power problem, not a Hollywood problem. And yeah, it's just, it stinks.
Yeah. I mean, look, the reality is I think you're going to get most of these things in the areas of entertainment politics because people want to read about those
people.
Well,
because they're famous people. Yeah. Because they're famous people. But, you know.
But we've seen it some in business already, some in media. Yep. I mean, there's definitely going to be more in media. We've seen a fair amount of that already, too. And I think it's going to continue. You know, not to get too far into this.
No, I mean, it's obvious. No, it is. It's obviously going to continue.
We're still at the, we're still in the wave of just the stuff that people are just chasing down the rumors that they've been hearing about.
Right. Like, that's the exact point. We are absolutely still in the category of stories people already knew. So when some real investigative journalism starts happening, we're going to get some names that come really out of what seems like nowhere, and that I think is going to be even more intense.
Although it's like the idea of like more out of the blue than Charlie Rose.
No, see, this is something we could talk about separately a little bit. One thing we've got to stop is the, oh, but he seemed so nice on TV. If we haven't learned from sports over the past decade, we got to take the lesson now. We don't know these people. We do not know these effing people. We don't know what they're like. We don't know if they're good or bad. We don't know if they treat people well or commit crimes against them, period. We do not know. They are actors. They are professionals. Even other people in entertainment who are not actors, they are professionals at conveying a particular image that has, generally speaking, nothing to do with who they are as people. So the idea of, oh, but I watched him do interviews forever. And I know you're not making excuses or even saying this, but that is like a thing we do in society. Oh, Charlie Rose, how could it? No, there's no famous people. We don't know them. You do not know who they are.
Oh, I mean, look, I'm going to agree and disagree with your point here in that, yes, like everything you said is absolutely true. I talk about this a lot, you know, when people ask me about meeting bands. I'm like, they're strangers, man. You don't know them. And like,
you do not know them.
Whether you get along with them or like them or think they're interesting has nothing to do with what you think of their actual work.
It may not even have anything to do with who they actually are as people.
Right. You know, but I would say my counterpoint to that would be, and now, boy, it's weird looking in retrospect, but, you know, John Oliver did a whole bit about Charlie Rose flirting on the CBS Morning News because it just the thought of Charlie Rose flirting seems so ridiculous. So not to say that.
How does the thought of Roger Ailes flirting sound to you?
Yeah, well, I understand, but you know this. It's Mr. PBS. I'm not saying like oh, we shouldn't believe it. Like, of course we clearly it happened.
No, I know. I know.
That's not my point. But it's just, I know. You know what I mean. It's just. There are just things that, like, whoa, that guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's a visceral thing. And yes, of course, we, like, it really could be anybody. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I get that. But there's also some just sort of like, whoa, are you kidding? You know? Yeah. And there's going to be more of those. There's going to be a lot more of those.
What I'm saying is get used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, well, we're starting to get used to it. I definitely think that's true. So
yeah, well, you know what? Let me rephrase that. Let's not get used to it, but you know, because I hope to be able to muster outrage for each one of these.
I think it's going to be interesting when we have the hot, young, handsome Hollywood actor.
Yeah, because right? That's going
to have, you know, there was a little bit of an Affleck thing, you know, that didn't really rise to it. But I think that, you know, there will be a genuine
right off Casey. Casey had a pretty serious one and that rubbed right off him. So that was before all this went down.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if that gets brought back up. But yeah, no, I mean, here's the real test. The first superhero, because there's going to be a superhero who gets named in one of these things.
Yep.
Somebody from the Marvel or DC universe. Someone who is a gigantic star. And yeah, I think that probably will be the truest test of whether there's real progress or not. Because it's easy. Well, it may not be easy, but it's tolerable to erase Kevin Spacey from your film. You can't erase the lead superhero from your superhero movie. That will be interesting.
Yeah. Although, look, I mean, yes, it's tolerable to erase Kevin Spacey from your film, but, like, you know, talking about making House of Cards without him, that seems like, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like he'd be pretty essential to that.
Or transparent, you know? Without Jeffrey Tambor.
Right.
I mean, both of these things are theoretically happening. And
that's an excellent example, because it's really hard for me to imagine Transparent without Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah, but again, House of Cards is a show about politics. There can be other politicians. Transparent is a show about a transparent and transgender issues in general, and there can be other transparents and transgender people.
Yeah.
There's, you know, by no means am I casting aspersions on any of the actors who played these parts, but if Batman or Superman or Iron Man or Thor, it's not as easy to erase those guys. It's not as easy to say, well, there's not another Thor, you know, so it means you're recasting or whatever. But, and again, hopefully, and by all accounts, Chris Hemsworth is a delightful man. So I'm not accusing anyone. I'm just saying at some point we're going to get someone who's too big to say we'll move on.
Well, look, let's be honest. And I, you know, I'm in the name of honesty, I'm completely speculating on this 100%. I have no idea, but doesn't it seem likely that Iron Man?
Oh man, let's not. Please, let's not. Because he's had problems
somewhere
and like,
in his substance abuse laden James Toback working with career, he crossed the line somewhere.
I mean, let's hope not.
I hope not. But I'm just saying that would not be like, one of those ones where you'd be like, "Well, that's way out of left field."
No, but you know, like I do. No, of course not. You'd be like, "Well, he was a crack addict for a long time."
Yeah.
So. I can only imagine what happened, but also I like that guy.
I do too.
I want to think that, yeah, he had some troubles, but he mostly only hurt himself and he bounced back really well. And he's a decent human. So I hope not, man. And I hate to be like, that's where we live now, right? Yeah. We live in a world where it's did my favorite actor, athlete, whoever, commit heinous crimes, or is it safe to cheer for them?
By the way, athletes is a whole other category of thing we haven't really gotten into yet.
I wrote about that in the San Francisco Examiner a couple weeks ago. The sexism and toxic masculinity in sports is a major problem, and it's either going to have to be dealt with now by people in power, or sports is going to have a similar reckoning to what Hollywood is happening having right now.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just Isaiah Thomas, frankly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, again, it's the same sort of thing where we have a ton of rumors, tons of innuendo.
By the way, that guy's still working, I might add.
That's what I'm saying. A few established cases of sexual harassment or assault, and it has all pretty successfully been swept under the rug after a reasonably short period of time. You know, I guess we don't know if that's also going to end up the case in Hollywood, but right now sports is floating in this zone of having the exact same issues as Hollywood, probably at a similar frequency, and no one has come knocking hard on their door yet, but if they're smart, they will clean the house before that knock comes.
Yeah. I would agree.
By the way, today's article in the Examiner is a narrative, an abstract narrative meditation on the president and Marshawn Lynch that I highly recommend, if I may be so bold as to recommend my own work.
Yeah, and you'll find my work in the Examiner as well. I'm in the letter to the letters to the editor section, asking about where'd you find this Kolsky dude? What's up with him?
The title of the letter to the editor is Stick to Sports.
Indeed. Stick to Sports. Also, stick to teen dramas is also part of that.
I think you know, if I could, I would.
Indeed. All right. Do we got anything else? Should we turn to homework? I feel like there's something I'm forgetting we were going to talk about.
Well... Did you want to talk about your experimental and apparently unsuccessful foray into Deadwood?
Yeah, and look, I'm not giving up. I get it's good. I'll go watch it again. But I had a hard time with the first episode. I did. And it's not the show, it's me. I'm just not excited by Westerns. I'm just not. You know?
Yeah. Well, that does not project well for the new Western coming out on Netflix called what's it called? You remember
Godless, I believe.
Godless. Yeah. About a town full of women, which I am pretty excited about. We watched a sort of a short that seems like it was a similar vein, and I don't know, do we ever talk about it? The Laura Dern Western short we watched?
I think we did. I don't know.
Well, there was like a 5 to 15 minute short Western on the internet starring Laura Dern about a town of women defending themselves, sort of.
I like that. If all the Westerns were 15 minutes, I'd definitely be more into it.
Well, so this is 7 episodes and probably about 7 hours. So here's the thing I want to get. I mean, okay. Your Western opposition is in part, if I understand it correctly, and tell me if I'm wrong, the same as your sort of period piece.
Well, in that Westerns are a subset of period pieces, yes. Right. All Westerns are period pieces.
So it's a subset of your period pieces.
But it's
in as much as it is a world in which, you know, people of color were oppressed.
Yeah, that's part of it. But it's distinct from that.
Okay.
In that it's just not a world that I enjoy or interest me, and I feel like it's been overdone. Like, it's just a, you know, it's a particular...
Has it been overdone, really, though? I mean, it was overdone for a while.
Yeah, but... I mean, not... Obviously, there are fewer of them lately, or within the last 10, 15 years than there were.
I feel like the Westerns that have come out over the last 10 or 15 years have been, generally speaking, a lot of good movies.
That'd
I think it's
better.
Hard to get them made.
You're right, because exactly. It's hard to get them made, so you better have a good one if you're coming to the table.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I think of the Hell or High Water, you know? I think of, what was the one? 310 to Yuma? Is that what it was? 410 to Yuma? Something like that?
Yeah, I didn't watch that one. Hell or High Water I enjoyed.
Hell or High Water is just a good movie, and granted, that's modern.
So, you lose some of that.
But it's distinctly Western, and I mean, Justified is again modern, but it's basically a Western.
Justified is the kind of Western I like.
So here's the question I'm getting to is, like, part of it is
because Justified's eliminated a lot of the tropes. You know what I mean? Like the tropes I just don't enjoy.
But if you turn the tropes on their head with a town full of women, doesn't that at least intrigue you?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, sure, the standard Western is a pretty dismissive thing of anyone who's not a 45-year-old white man, but obviously this is going to be different in some respects.
Yeah.
And look, is dynamite.
I love Soderbergh, and I'll check it out, and, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, like, I didn't... I'm not a horror movie buff, but I really enjoyed Get Out because it it's a genre film that, you know what I mean, like, was made in this really interesting way, and I'm certainly prepared for the possibility it could be that, but okay. I'm not excited for Godless because I'm not ready to jump back into mid-19th century, you know, gold rush or planes, you know, that story. I just, yeah.
That's fair. But I just, let's leave the door open for Godless, because I feel like it might. I was going to say that the guy who actually wrote and directed it, Soderbergh's a producer. The guy who actually wrote and directed it is the guy who wrote Out of Sight for Soderbergh. So, the pedigree of this is really good.
Yeah, I would agree. And so, I'm in. You know, for now. And I'm still going to try with Deadwood. Like, I'm not giving up. I recognize that I already started zoning out about 20 minutes in. So,
So with Deadwood, I just like...
It's just so Western-y, though. You know what I mean?
It's very Western-y. But I got it just like the character. Everything. It's so good that I got to believe if you can get a few episodes. First of all, there's...
I just need more hooks than they swear a lot. You know what I mean?
Like, all right, I think there's more hooks than that. But, you know, it's like some... Like, there's this... I feel like you are, of people I know, one of the quickest to have... a couple of things that bother you take you completely out of something.
Yeah, maybe.
And so I'm just like, it's kind of how I feel about Smilf, although I have much less evidence. Just like, let's stick with it for a little bit, because I just believe it's good. Yeah. And I have to believe that even if certain things bother you, like, if you can just get a few episodes into it, I have to believe it'll hook
you. You say that, but I'm also not afraid to turn around on something, right? Like, I'll admit I'm wrong.
No, totally. I'm not trying to criticize your methods of enjoying
it
things.
It doesn't take me totally out of it. I can keep an open mind. But
I'm not saying you're not keeping an open mind. I'm just saying don't let the sort of de rigueur Western aspects of a show that's really great distract you from some of the great things.
All right. I'm going to keep sticking with it.
Give it a try.
I have a thing for you, and this is not a homework assignment. It's a way down the road thing because you're already working on Justified, and there's plenty of that, and there's also a lot of TV in life.
I've also been – I never watched – Parks and Rec religiously, you know. I've seen probably half the episodes over time.
Yeah.
But I've begun to engage in a straight watch through of Parks and Rec as well. And I have to tell you, I had not seen the first season episodes in years. And God, are they funny. And Amy Poehler is a national treasure.
Amy Poehler's great. The show didn't fully have its voice in that first season. And I think most people will tell you you can really start at season two. But it doesn't mean there aren't things that are redeeming about season one.
That's the thing is, like, yeah, I'm sure it does get better, but oh my God, Chris Pratt and Amy Poehler are enough in every episode to make it enjoyable for me.
Season one is also really short too.
Yes. You get such a sense though of seeing like early career fat Chris Pratt, you can already tell like how magnetic and awesome he is. Like it's no surprise. Even though his career is very untraditional for a blockbuster star, like when you see his early work, there's no surprise that he did what he's done.
The thing that I would very much like you to take up at some point,
mm-hmm.
I got to get you to try The West Wing.
Oh God, yeah, that's way we gotta. That's yeah, I can't even. Yeah, not now.
It's so good, and there are so many great people in it. And I think it will have the opposite effect of from what you're anticipating, in that you might actually like it'll be nice to escape into this world that, yes, you'll be transparently aware is very different from our current one. But yeah, you should see The West Wing. Even more than 90210, you should have seen The West Wing in your life.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get me in front of the show that I've now already forgotten the name of, 90210. I just don't, that is not happening.
But The West Wing is worth it. And I will harangue you about it down the road.
All right. Well, I just want you to know, as you throw these seminal shows that I skipped at me, that I haven't even mentioned trying to make you watch The Punisher. So you're welcome.
Okay. Would that be The Punisher, the movie, TV series?
No, the Netflix series just dropped.
Oh, the Netflix series that just dropped. All right.
Yeah, the next in the Marvel's Defenders category, The Punisher.
Yeah.
Although I will say John Bernthal is a delight.
John Bernthal is The Punisher?
You didn't know that?
Ugh.
Why are you uching that?
Ugh.
What's your problem?
I just what's my I don't know. Like what's John Barenthal ever done for me?
I mean, he was good in The Walking Dead and Wolf of Wall Street. Like, what do you want?
Was he good in Walking Dead? Was he?
I liked him. You didn't like him in Walking Dead?
I did not care for that Shane. Whole love triangle. The Shane, like, I don't even remember the wife's name anymore.
Nobody cares about
the wife. It is sort of amazing that they don't, like, literally never mention her on that show anymore, do they?
She's been dead for years, man.
Like, yeah, I know, but she's the mother of this baby that they're carrying around all the time.
That baby seems to have sort of mysteriously slunk into the background as well. There's a new baby. Do you know about the new baby?
I'm a few episodes behind, so that it's entirely possible that there's been a baby that has arrived since the last episode that I've seen.
Arrived is an interesting word. It makes it sound like you think that baby was birthed, but it was not. There was just a baby.
Oh, it just showed up. Okay.
Yeah, like there was just a baby sitting somewhere at some point. Rick saved a baby.
We mentioned this in the pre-show, but this show and Mr. Robot are sliding into the...
To get back into Mr. Robot. I think this season, after a bit of a shaky start, has turned it up a notch. I've enjoyed the last couple episodes of Mr. Robot.
Okay, because I just watched the shaky start, which followed last season's really shaky ending.
Understandable. Things actually, I'll put it this way. Stuff is happening.
Okay.
For what feels like the first time in a season and a half, stuff is happening. Plot is advancing. There are events.
That's good. Because at some point, like, great camera work. Right. It was like, it's
it
just not
great.
Yeah. It's just not really a reason to
great.
Like. Yeah.
The acting never stopped being wonderful. The show just stopped moving. And I think it has picked the pace up a bit. So I would say maybe for the next week or the week after, see if you can't catch up.
All right. Writing problems are problems. You know, they're almost insurmountable problems. And I think that show's had a lot of writing problems.
Well, you know, it felt a little bit like Lost, where we had a really good story and then we had to try to expand it and we ended up with some real lulls.
Yeah. Although I think the lulls in Lost are somewhat exaggerated, personally.
You don't think Lost?
I think Lost had some pacing issues more than it had story lulls. That makes
sense. Okay, well, that may be true, but to this day, there have never been so many bottle episodes about stuff nobody cares about as that season and a half of Lost, where they were just trying to stretch the show out.
Yeah, see, I love the Lost bottle episodes, almost all of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though they have nothing to do with anything.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because, and you know, I've said this before, not to get into a whole Lost thing, and this is part of why, like, the ending doesn't bother me nearly as much as it does a lot of people. To me, Lost was a character study, and so any of these, and I think had the characters were amazing, you know, like, they're really interesting people with really interesting stories, and the show is about their journey, and so those bottle episodes that deepen your understanding of one of those characters were rewarding
to me. Like Paolo? I was so glad to understand Paolo more deeply.
I mean, look, the Nikki and Paolo thing is sort of a, you know, maybe a famous misstep. And I'm not gonna sit there and say that was the you know, the best episode.
I think it's a famous misstep because it's a microcosm of the many missteps that were, you know, perhaps less serious but still missing.
No, but see, it's kind of a different thing though, right? Because Nikki and Paolo were just two characters they tried to introduce and then make something. You know, they did a bottle episode to try to make them a thing. Like, that's not really what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Guess.
They did some bottle episodes to try to, I don't know, whatever. You're right. We should not litigate Lost. But either way, I would say Mr. Robot is worth getting back into.
All right.
So put that on the list. Also, on the near future list, a week from today, so we won't be able to talk about it next week, but we will the week after, our little baby, the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, comes back.
All right. I would also throw out there's a new season of Easy coming out on Netflix, I believe, December 1st.
That's what I'm talking about. So that's okay. So next week we will have Easy and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, two of my favorite TV shows. Also, you are going to watch Three Billboards this week. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm going to say that's correct, because I'm under the belief that it's going to open in Minneapolis this week. If you know, but I was also under the belief that it was going to open last week. So,
well, shows how much you know.
Yeah. So if it's here, I'll go see it. That's what I'm telling you.
Great. Okay. So that's a couple of things. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
What am I doing for Thanksgiving? I'm going to cook some food and watch a lot of football, most likely. And then
wait, when you say cook some food, you got people coming over? What's the deal?
I actually am going over to a person's house, and we're going to make food together.
What's your contribution?
I'm making Cornish hen, since there's only two of us. Rather than turkey, it seemed like a better size.
Wow, look at you, Cornish hen.
And I'm going to make some garlic truffle mashed potatoes.
Bro. I'd say save some, but it'll just go bad in your fridge because I'm not coming there.
That's correct, 'cause it's not going to be anytime soon.
No. I am going to be in Wisconsin in a month and a half, so we should talk.
Sorry to hear that.
My contribution, I am also going to someone else's Thanksgiving, and my contribution is one 750 milliliter bottle of Maker's Mark bourbon.
Oh, that's strong.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll bring over some bourbon just because I like to drink bourbon. I don't know if she likes to drink bourbon or not.
Well, there's one good way to find out, my friend.
That's a good point. All right. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Not to be too cheesy, but we are thankful that anyone listens to this. And
For sure.
The idea that people come up and talk to me about opinions that I've sometimes forgotten I've had, but have said publicly, is a never ending delight. So thank you. And thank you, man, for doing this. So we've been potting together for a long time now.
This is episode 95. Which makes me think, based on, you know, we missed a week here or there, but it's pretty close to every week for 2 years. So, yeah, man, good for us.
good for us. By the way, not our first podcast together.
No.
Yeah, so
that's
there you
true.
Go.
That's all right. True. Just we're someday when they make the documentary about the toy department. They will mention the Bone Sports podcast where our delightful chemistry was birthed.
That's right. What's the thing you're most looking forward to eating on Thursday?
Stuffing. I'm a stuffing guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
No hesitation. Give me some stuffing. In a perfect world, I got some really good gravy and some mashed potatoes, and I'm just going to mix it all together and just devour it. But if I have to pick just one thing, it's stuffing, and I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, I'm putting the stuffing in her hands, which I think is an element of trust right there, for sure.
I will say this, and knowing nothing about the young lady that you will be dining with, and this is not a gender issue. This is just cooking strategies issue. Do not bring me your alternative healthy stuffing on Thanksgiving. I don't want weird stuff in there. I don't want anything besides what I've come to expect with like bread and maybe some mushrooms and onions or whatever. Like, this is my day to gain the 15 pounds that I'm going to pretend I'm going to lose on January 1st. So don't tell me about how this version of stuffing is actually better for it. I don't want it. I want regular, unhealthy stuffing.
Now, I believe that she is planning a cornbread-based stuffing.
Okay, great. Cornbread's great.
Yeah. Now, because that's a little different, but I would not qualify as alternative veggie or healthy.
No. That's not some dumb, health food stuffing. That's just a different choice for the base, and I respect it.
Yeah. I mean, look, the day's about gluttony. So, keep your health food stuff out of it, right?
Exactly. Give me all of my things prepared in the fattiest, most unhealthy way possible on Thanksgiving.
Indeed. To fatty things and to all of you, thank you so much. And let's get out of here.
Thanks. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.